Oh man, inside my ears is a palace of disgust. Something I've learned from headphones. Welcome everybody. Driving home. Four workshops down. Eight to go. Oh my god, that sounds horrible. But 16 flights. Down from 24. That makes it sound pretty manageable. Right? Just knock them down one at a time. I actually spent almost the entire flight working on the story that I'm working on. Working on the thing I'm working on for the workshop. So it made the flight really fly by. There was a woman sitting next to me. I guess, you know, worst person on the flight. This one, I didn't really have a lot of bad ones. There was someone who was preparing to get on the flight. He looked to be a teenager. Older teenager. Let's say 15, 16. And he had like a Razor scooter. And he was, you know, like standing, waiting to board the plane, holding it. And like standing on it with one foot. You know what I mean? Like he was going to just go scooting onto the plane. Which I really wanted to see him do, but I boarded before him. So that was disappointing. And then, of course, you know, I get off the plane and he's sitting there waiting to, waiting where they do the thing where they're like, you're going to need to check that bag. Because I assume somebody was like, yeah, you're going to.
Please insert ticket with black stripe facing Christ. Down. If you do not have a ticket, press blue button.
Blue button. Good thing that's so loud. I was worried that it wouldn't be loud enough.
Processing.
Oh, it's so loud.
$26. Please insert credit card.
$26.
Remove credit card.
Bam.
Processing. Thank you. Amount authorized. Press button for receipt.
No thanks. All right, let's get out of here. So this guy has a Razor scooter, and he's waiting for it off the plane, and I was like, I don't know if this guy, like, he didn't look like he was injured or something. He didn't look like he was, I don't know, I wondered, like, maybe this guy is, like, disabled or something, right? And they're like, well, this is a comfort device for him or something. Nothing. I saw nothing to make that evident. So, that was a guy, but I guess the worst, and this one was not bad, was the lady sitting next to me, who brought a lot of shit on this flight for it being a 2.5-3 hour flight. Like, she looked like she was prepared to go international. She brought this, like, seat cushion thing that she, like, deployed on her seat. I didn't know that, I was sitting, you know, her husband was on the aisle. And he got on the plane, like, way when he was supposed to, and she got on the plane way later. And I don't know what happened there. But whatever. That's, like, definitely one of those, the comfort of older couples things. Where he's just like, eh, fuck it, I'll just get on now, and she'll get on way later instead of waiting for the other person. So she gets on, and then she, like, spends forever, like, setting up this cushion and then whatever, and she brought a lot of snacks. And one of the snacks she brought was, like, a plastic bag that looked to be full of cheese. And I'm talking, like, a pound of cheese. It reminded me of this time I was on a flight. I can't remember where I was going or why, but the lady next to me just had a huge bag of cheese curds that she was eating on the plane, which I was like, I don't know. I don't know how I feel about that as an airplane food, guys. I'm a little judgmental, perhaps, but that's... Here's the thing. I had this idea. I was like, I want to write, like, an article of, like, airplane travel hacks, right? Because I feel like everyone looks those up. I've looked them up. There's nothing good on there. But write some and just have, like, a couple good ones in there, but then the rest is secretly stuff that's, like, here's the way to hack travel. Don't be an asshole, and here's how you cannot be an asshole. For example... Shower before you get on an airplane. If you're someone who has any level of body odor whatsoever. And Skip the perfume or the cologne. The cologne seems to be worse these days. I don't know when we made this switch where it's like, it doesn't seem like ladies are getting as overboard with the perfume anymore, but guys have gone ape shit on the cologne. Not all guys, but it seems like all guys who are wearing it, I'm like, I shouldn't know that you have cologne on when you're sitting a row ahead of me on an airplane. Like, that's a good test of, you've applied too much cologne, sir. Just shower instead. Just be clean. And don't worry about the cologne. That's not necessary. That's not helping anybody. Guy in front of me is just, like, straddling the white line for the median. I don't know why. Seems very unconcerned about it. You know, there was, I've had these moments of weird humanity at the airport that I've been sort of collecting, because I was like, I should write a little thing about this, like 24 of these little things, one for each flight, right? And like, one of them was so weird, because two times ago, okay, this person does not know what the fuck they're doing. I get to the airport. So I get to the airport in Portland. I take like an express train, and like, you pass this guy, right, who's not paying attention here on the road. But then you're like, I don't really want to get in the lane in front of him, because he's like obviously not paying attention. But I guess I have no choice. So I get to the airport at Portland at basically the same time every time I fly. I take an 8:14 express train from Cassie's place, and it's not an express train, but it's a red line that runs on the blue line, because basically then I can get on this train and just stay on it all the way to the airport. I don't have to change trains. So I take that every time, because it's, you know, it's reliably when I can get there, and it's just the right amount of time. So then, you know, there's a couple places to eat. One of the nice things in the airport there is they're like, hey, the food and stuff costs the same as it does downtown. So that's cool. So I eat there. I pack a sandwich, but I eat there and then eat the sandwich when I get to the other side in Denver, where they're like, does our food cost the same as downtown Denver? We're not telling. I'm like, well, if it does, you are fucking people hard in your downtown restaurant. That's the other funny part about it, is I'm kind of like, well, yeah, I guess it's like, I'm real excited about, oh, we only charge like overpriced city price, not airport complete rate price. I mean, it's like, wow, what a deal we're getting, that they only charge like the crazy amount that they charge in a downtown urban area, as opposed to like going even further, because it's like, you know what, fuck you. You have no choice. You have no option. So anyway, I go to this place to get a sandwich, and it's like a huge sandwich. It's like a deli sandwich. It's like $9. But you know, it's like, all right, I buy that this is what this would cost. And so I get in line behind this older lady, and it takes me a long time to realize like what's going on, because I'm just kind of standing in line, just thinking about my sandwich, my impending sandwich, and you know how much I'm going to enjoy it. I found this to be really effective, is like on the train to the airport, I start thinking about what I'm going to eat at the airport, because then by the time you get there, you're like, this is going to be great. So I'm waiting. Just, you know, continuing that process of like, this is going to be great, and it's happening in like 2 minutes. And it takes a while before I notice how long I've been in line and we haven't moved and I'm behind one person. And so what turns out to be happening is she is paying in change, like $9 in change. Now, this is like mildly annoying normally, right? Because you're just like, I was behind some lady at Starbucks and she insisted on paying with change, you know? And it's one of those things that's kind of going away because so many people pay with their cards and all that. But, so it was mildly annoying. Not bad. I wasn't like going to miss my flight. It was just a thing. However, what started to annoy me was when I started thinking to myself, that wait a minute, there's like, I have more questions here than like, why are you paying with change? I get why someone would pay with change. What I don't understand is why someone would take what had to be well over $9 in change, because she did the move where she had the bag and she had it like dumped out on the counter and was counting it out. So you're like, okay, there's like a fuckload of change on the table here. Why did she bring a fuckload of change through airport security and she's like gonna carry it through the airport to spend on things? Like, why wouldn't you get that turned into dollars first? And why would you do that? And also, apparently, at least if you're an old lady, you can go through airport security with a huge bag of change, which probably weighs like, I don't know, 5-6 pounds. I mean, it makes a pretty handy blackjack, doesn't it? Couldn't I club somebody with a bag full of change? You do a lot worse than a sock full of quarters, as we've learned, if you're gonna like take somebody out of commission. I don't know. It's just like weird. It's like, and you don't need it. You don't need it. I've never heard of somebody whacking somebody with a sack full of bills and then getting away with something. I'm sure it's happened. But it seems less likely. So just, why did this person have this much change? And why did they decide the airport was the ultimate choice for where they were going to spend it? Like, that seems like a terrible idea. If someone was like, how are you going to spend your change? I'd be like, I don't know, I might take it to one of those Coinstar machines where they kind of fuck you over and charge you like 10 cents to the dollar. But you can get like an Amazon gift card, so maybe I'll do that when I need something from Amazon, or, you know, some shit like that, right? But no, if someone was like, how about you take it to the airport? I mean, I have a Wonder Woman lunchbox full of change. I wasn't not inspired to bring it to the airport. I wasn't like, oh, that's a good idea. That's a terrible idea. One of the worst ways I can think of to spend a bunch of change. But, you know, it's just like weird humanity shit, right? Because you're like, I guess this person has change at home. I guess they probably aren't the person who's going to go to the bank and be like, give me some dollars. By the way, the bank, fuck you. When you go to the bank and you have a bunch of change, like when I was a kid, you would go to the bank with a big jar of change and they'd be like, oh, cool, we'll dump it in our coin machine and, you know, tell you what you've got and give you the cash. As long as you had an account there, which isn't a lot to ask. Now it's like they'll send you home with wrappers to do it. And I'm kind of like, well, there's no way I'm doing that. Like, no way. Because how much is my time worth? If I have to wrap that up and it's like, I don't know, how many, probably 25, 50 cents of pennies. Probably 50 cents, right, in a roll. And it's like, okay, so I mean, if it's 50 cents, that's what I'd lose on, what, $1 million. I mean, I would lose one out of every $10 if I use the Coinstar, right, if it charges 10%. So I would pay 10 bucks if I had $100 of change, which is a lot. Does it take me more than like an hour to roll up all my change? Probably. So is that worth my $10? Probably. I just don't know why the bank. I know you got that machine. I know it's there. You didn't throw it away. And I'm sure you use it at the end of the day to like count your shit, right? There's a fucking crazy mailbox just on the road here. That seems like a mistake. I don't get it. I don't understand why the bank is fucking you so hard on that. Speaking of the bank. So Frontier Airlines does this really fucking annoying thing. They don't do it every flight. But certain flights they do where while you're trapped there in the seat, they make an announcement about, you know, how you can get their Frontier Airlines MasterCard. And it's really fucking annoying. For a lot of reasons, but I think it's mostly annoying because you're like trapped there. You know what I mean? You're like stuck in this chair. You've got nowhere to go. And then it's basically like, we're going to just put on a commercial. And so then you have to listen to like how you can get 40,000 miles. And also, like, if you're with your spouse, both of you can apply and double your miles. Like, they're giving you a little hint there, you know, because it's like, you know, you could rack up twice as much debt if you're here with your spouse because you can get your own credit card like a big boy. And here's the worst part about it, though. I've never had a credit card. I have, like, good credit, but not great credit, because basically the only thing that's counted towards my credit is my student loans. Like, I've never paid... Oh, my God. These motherfuckers turned a single turn lane into a double turn lane in a way that looked very dangerous. I've never had a credit card or paid off something like that, so I don't have, like, great credit because I've never dabbled in credit, really. So I was like, maybe I should get this credit card. Not because I need the extra money, but here's why I was thinking I would get the credit card. Because I could pay it off, I could build a little credit, and I could probably use those, like, 40,000 or 400,000 or whatever thousand miles. Because, by the way, I signed up for, you know, their frequent flyer program, the free version or whatever. I don't know how many miles you have to get to actually earn something, but it's like a billion. I mean, you get like a billion miles and then they're like, you could upgrade to stretch seating where there's like more leg room because there's the escape door or whatever. And you're like, I mean, okay. Or I could have paid like $15. I mean... So you're saying that, like, a billion miles is worth $15? I mean, what the hell? What kind of revolution in travel have you created where it's like you can get there for $15 for every billion miles? That's a revolution that I want to be a part of. But anyway, like, it just... it extra pisses me off because I have to sit there and listen to them pitch it every time, knowing... that I got rejected. Oh, I don't know if I told that part, but I got rejected from it because, you know, I don't have any credit, basically. And it's extra insulting, too, because they not only reject you, but then they send you a letter explaining why you were rejected. But the letter doesn't really say why you're rejected. It just says that you're rejected. And you can, like, take it up with, you know, whoever, I guess. You can call, like, whatever... you know, shadowy figures sitting around a large oak table make these decisions, I guess. Which is crazy, because I'm like, I don't think I'm... I barely had the energy to fill this out to try and get the card, let alone the energy to appeal your decision. It's like, I'm not on fucking death row. I just didn't get a credit card. I mean, big fucking deal. So I'm not gonna do that. But I feel like... somehow I should be exempt from having to listen to them pitch this. I mean, it's fucking annoying that they do it already. Because it's like, you know, I don't know. I don't mean to get into old man Pete, but it was like, back in the day, it seemed like they treated people who bought like a $200 plane ticket like someone who had spent $200 to travel with them. You know, and they actually meant the like, we know you've got your choice of airlines, so thanks for choosing us. And now it's just kind of like you treat someone who bought a $200 ticket. It doesn't matter because to them, they're like, well, so did everybody else. And also, if you don't buy that ticket, some other asshole will. So we don't even really care. Which is pretty fucked up when you think about it. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of like this. If I treated people like that at my job, you know, I get asked where the bathroom is probably like 5 times a week, right? Which isn't a crazy amount, but I don't spend as much time at the desk as other people. But 5 times a week, I get asked where the bathroom is. Imagine if I was just like, eh, fuck you. Like, find it. I don't know. Because I'm like, you know, people ask me that all the time, and I don't really care. And I'm just over it. You know? You're just as good to me as any other library user. And so, if I don't tell you where the bathroom is, someone else will just come along and check out these books anyway. Which is true. That is 100% true. But, I don't know. It's terrible customer service. Anyway. I just feel like somehow I should be exempt from it or allowed to, like... sometime I want to like stand up on the plane and make my pitch when they're done and just be and like have one of those hats with a megaphone on top and just be like, I'd like to just tell everyone that I applied and didn't get it. So don't get your hopes up. And also it's not like applying for it gets you anything really anyway. I mostly was doing it to get better credit and couldn't get better credit because I don't have good enough credit. credit is so strange and mysterious, but it seems like, well, you don't really have good enough credit to earn better credit, and therefore, here you are. Or like, Wells Fargo is always offering me a credit card. And then they're like, well, we need to do some other verifications or whatever first. And I'm like, you offer me a fucking credit card every time I go in there. And like every time I do a transaction online. Why would you offer me that if I can't have it? Like, why wouldn't you say, oh, you know what? This dude can't have that. So let's stop offering this to him. I mean, it's just they do it to everyone. Maybe I'll just get a fucking Target card. They seem to love that. They love to tell you about their Target card. But I don't really shop at Target that much. I mean, I do, but I try to not shop at Target. That's one of my money-saving tips. Because if you go to Target, you're going to find other stuff you want. If you don't go to Target, you won't. That's a very simple rule of thumb. Other humanity in the airport. I saw a guy when I was flying out. I'm walking, you know, I just walk around a lot, right? And I saw this guy, he's like exiting the moving walkway and he takes a tumble. And I can tell he's got like crutches or something. So I'm like, oh my God, like he's got a broken leg or whatever. And he just goes down and he's like falls flat on his back. And then the thing is kind of taking him and just pushing him against the thing. Bunch of people run up to help him, and I did not. I wasn't as close, but also I think I was, like, so shocked. I mean, I don't know why. It was like I was just watching it unfold thinking, like, this is crazy shit. And the guy kept trying to, like, stand up, but he was, instead of, like, a bunch of people were, like, reaching to him to, like, help him stand up. It's funny because they, like, took this as a very urgent situation. Like, he was going to get sucked under the thing, and I was like, I think he's going to be okay. Like, he could probably just roll off the thing and then move forward. And he kept reaching up onto the rail, which is also moving, so that kept, like, knocking him over again. And finally, a bunch of people got him up on his, well, his foot, not his feet, because he only had one fucking leg. And I was like, oh, that's what happened. I guess he slipped on his crutches or whatever, falls, and then the thing is just, like, battering him. And he just continually was sort of, a moving walkway can kind of turn into a moving fallway if you just start falling, is what I've learned. So that was a very human moment as well, because you're just like, eh. I mean, a lot of people rushed in to help this guy. It was good. It's like, you know, if you want faith in humanity, there's something to that. I mean, a bunch of people run in to help this guy who's, like, got one fucking leg and whatever. And then, so I didn't act as quickly as I would have thought, I guess, but I was surprised. But I made up for it because today I'm getting on the plane and there's this mom and she's got, like, a baby strapped to her and a huge backpack. And then she's chasing a little kid who's probably, like, 2. And he's just running away from her. And he's not that fast, but she cannot catch him. And, like, someone kind of tried to grab him half-heartedly. And she was like, oh, grab him, you know. And this stranger sort of tried but didn't really make it. So then I stepped in his way and I grabbed him and spun him around, you know, and was like, you need to go that way. And so then he went back to her and it was all good. And she was like, thanks. You know, but it was weird. It was weirder to step in on that one because you're like, I don't want to like step in and like pick up this kid and this mom or, you know, the kid starts crying or something and the mom's like, what the fuck? I mean, it was a quick set of decisions where I was like, I think this mom would be fine with me standing in this kid's way and like, you know, give him a little spin around here. And she totally was. But it seemed more fraught with peril. Like, when the dude is falling on the moving walkway, obviously you can help him, right? You can, like, help him get back up, and what's he gonna do? But when the little kid's running, you just have that... I don't know if everyone has this. I don't know if it's, like, single dudes have this more than other people. But I have a very developed sense of, like... You gotta keep yourself very safe from interacting with children. You know what I mean? Like, that is not That is a no-go area for you, sir, because of your station in life. You're like suspect number one in these situations, demographically. And it's weird. Like, I've seen in the workplace other people don't have that. They don't have that complete fear of... I've known coworkers who, for example, if there was like a teenager at a program that they knew, and they know they're not supposed to do this and they wouldn't normally, but they've like given them a ride home. And I was like, under no circumstances would I ever do that, ever. Because like, you do that and then this kid could say anything, or anything could happen, or like, you just don't know. And what does a parent think when they see you dropping this kid off alone? I mean, that's horrible. And a lot of the coworkers I've had don't want to do it from like a, well, what if I get sued or what about this? And I'm like, what if you get accused of like molesting this kid? So yeah, there was a kid. There you go. So let's talk about greased light poles in Philly. I meant to talk about that when we were talking about football and Super Bowl. That's, I think, the whole reason I wanted to bring it up, other than... You know, big news, the Patriots are going to their Odell. I saw a thing on TV last night, too, that was like, you know, they're taking bets. I guess Pink is singing the national anthem. And it's like, will it be over or under 2 minutes long? And that's like, you know, a prop bet that they're doing. Which I guess is more interesting, right? I mean, those are bets that are more interesting to me just because... In 2 minutes, you'll know whether or not you won, right? And you get to watch. And it's sort of unspooling live, but it's not like a four-hour commitment. And there's not like knowledge of inside shit that's really going to help you a lot. You know what I mean? The over-under being 2 minutes. It's like, okay. You can take a guess. I think if Pink is smart, she'll go shorter. I'm not super familiar with Pink, but I don't think she's like a huge like songstress singer person. Like, I don't think she's like a vocal range person. That seems to be when people get themselves in trouble, is when they're like trying to show off their pipes, right? And by get in trouble, I mean they overdo it a little. So I don't know. I think she's probably going to be under. That's my big Super Bowl prediction, huh? But then I saw this thing. I guess one of the games leading up to the Super Bowl was in Philadelphia. And they were putting Crisco on the light poles to keep people from climbing them. Which I thought was really fucked up. I mean, I don't know why that just was so... It's just so absurd. And such a weird thing for somebody to do, to like climb a light pole... And not only that, but it's so consistent and predictable that someone would climb a light pole that they're like, we have to take measures to prevent this. And some city worker is out there with literally a can of Crisco greasing up the poles to make them more difficult to climb, which of course means a bunch of people tried to climb them, because a bunch of people see that and then they're like, all right, I accept your challenge. You know, maybe I was going to do this before, maybe not, but now I got to try and do it, because then I'm the guy who climbed a greased pole, which is pretty challenging, I would think. I would think it'd be pretty hard to climb a light pole in general, but what do I know? That's going to become the new name of this show. What do I know? Because whenever I talk about sports, especially, we get into what do I know almost immediately. But yeah, it's like, it's funny that it's so regular a behavior that they're like, they know it's coming. They know it's coming and they know they have to do something about it. Now, I think the mistake was like doing a story, like a news story about it. I feel like they should have instructed the people doing it and been like, listen, shut the fuck up. Like, if a reporter comes up to you and asks what you're doing, just tell them like, oh, you know, we're just doing this. And don't take a Crisco can out there, for God's sake. Take something else out there. And don't just be quiet about it. Because it's when you put it out there that that's what you're doing. That's when you entice people to do it, right? That's when you get people who are like, I'm going to climb that fucking pole. Oh, you think you've made an unclimbable pole? I'll show you an unclimbable pole. And we all know that means a penis, right? But that's code for peen. I don't know why that was so interesting to me. It just made me think sports are interesting. Sports were briefly interesting to me because of that. But also, I guess, I read that book. I think I talked about it on here, that Among the Thugs, about soccer hooligans, basically. And hooligans is such a, like, nice word for what they do. Get in these huge brawls and, like, people get killed and stuff like that. But compared to that shit, I mean, climbing poles, even if the poles get destroyed, I was like, I don't know, that's pretty tame by comparison, right? I think it's funny, though, that people, I don't want to just be cliche here, but it's kind of funny that people sort of riot when they do that shit, right? Like, that they'll riot when their team wins a game or whatever, or a big game, or their big loss. It seems like a big win is a more likely catalyst for a riot than a big loss, doesn't it? Which is so weird to me. Like, I don't understand why that's the case. I don't know. I think I could understand if it was a loss. Here's what I would get. All right. I'm from Philadelphia. We're playing a team in New England, the Patriots. And wherever the fuck they play, I go there to watch a game. And in the course of this game, we lose. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm going to fucking trash this town then. Fuck them. That I kind of get. What I don't get is, like, my team won at home, and therefore I'm going to trash the town. Like, I don't know. I've never been that guy, though. There are always those guys you knew that, you know, especially they would get drunk and they kind of wanted to destroy something, right? They wanted to, like, smash something or do something like that. I knew this guy who, he had to wear a cast on his hand for like a couple months or something in high school. And it was because he had cut his finger open really, really badly because in anger he had punched the rearview mirror of his own car. And I think it broke and cut his hand open or something like that. I mean, it was pretty bad. Pretty bad injury. And he had to wear this hilarious cast too because it just looked like he was giving the finger all the time. So that was pretty entertaining. I'll say that. But it was just like, and when you meet a guy like that, I just always feel like run the other way. This is not a good person to, you're not going to have fun with this guy. This guy's getting so pissed off that he like destroys the mirror on his own car. I mean, I guess it's one thing when you're like 17, because you don't know what you're doing. You don't know how to do shit right. But then when you're older and you start discovering these things about people, it's like, it's going to be a little word of caution here. I saw a thing that really annoyed me yesterday. I don't know why, but so Poonmaster Flex reactivated her Facebook, right? And she was off Facebook for a long time. She mostly got off it because, you know, she was with somebody before and they broke up. And a lot of his friends who were their mutual friends, but his friends were like real shitheads online, you know, kind of being dicks and I don't know. He was kind of like a frat boy moron. And so there you go. So then for some reason it came across her purview that his new wife / baby mama posted something that said, oh, I just found out my ex's or my fiance or my husband's ex reactivated her Facebook and like here's how I feel about that and a bunch of emojis and then it was like # I won, which was so funny because I was just like, you won, like what contest was this to see who could live the life that you're living? Because if by won you mean yeah she decided not to compete in that anymore, like she didn't want to do that, I mean, okay, she broke up with him, right? I don't want to just air her dirty laundry, but this is what happened. And so this is why I was pissed off, because I was like, you're a moron. Because how is that, like, I won? That would be like me bragging about winning at an Olympics where all the other people decided not to compete. You know, they were like, you know, running's just not for me anymore. So I'm done running. And somehow I became the last runner in the world. And then I was bragging that I beat everybody else. And it's like, well, yeah, you beat everyone else in a contest that you were only having with yourself. But I think it's like what really pissed me off about it is just this whole idea of like, why is that something that goes on Twitter? Like, why is that something that somebody's tweeting about? They're tweeting about their husband's ex reactivating their Facebook account and kind of using that as a slam. And then, like, I tweet that for what? For other people to be like, right on, girlfriend, or something? Like, that's crazy. That's crazy. But I don't know. I think Twitter and Facebook now have just become horrible. I don't know if they've always been horrible, but just try, if you take them off your phone and you can only use it on your, you know, laptop or your desktop computer or a tablet or something, I would just try it. I would also try, don't look at that stuff like before you go to bed and when you wake up in the morning, because that's like a total trap. You'll just sit in bed scrolling through shit. And you're just scrolling through these tweets that, like, don't even make sense. And I'm so tired of these tweets that are supposed to make, like, a good point about something, because they never do. Like, they're always set up on this false argument of, like, I don't know. I'm trying to think of, okay. There was one I saw that was, like, so I have a work set of social media, because that way I can still be on there. So when people go looking, they're like, oh, this is this guy. This is the professional version of this guy, which is true. And so there are some friends I have on the Facebook there that are like former students and stuff like that who've gone on to college and whatever. And I basically just accept any friend request on those, because I'm like, whatever. Like, I don't care. I don't care whose content this is, and I don't care what's going on. And it works pretty well. I highly recommend this. I highly recommend if you're getting a new job, or you think you may want to get a new job sometime in the future, I really recommend you get on there and you just make a professional version of your social media and your regular name and all that. And you just say, like, this is the work persona. Because, I mean, let's face it, we're all personas online anyway. So you might as well be your work persona, and then you've got that at work, and then you can be your home persona, and your actual, you know, that I guess is closer to your actual person, but probably not. But anyway, so there's some people on there who are just, I don't really know that well. But there's one person who posts a lot of stuff about transgender issues, and I don't know if this person is transgender or not. It doesn't really matter. But they posted something that was like, you know, the cost of transitioning, the cost of, like, I don't know what they called it, but like surgical transition, basically, physical, whatever. The transition is like $70,000 to $80,000, which I was like, holy shit, that's a lot. But then, you know, and they were like, and it costs, but it costs you nothing to respect someone who's transgender and has not transitioned yet or something like that. And it's kind of like these posts that I just feel are sort of, I mean, that's not a great example, but it's people are posting things where I think they're like imagining that they're posting it for people to get angry about. You know what I mean? For other people to then fight them. It's like every post I see, or every other post has this kind of vibe to it that it ends in implied, fight me. If you disagree, fight me. And, you know, internet fight me, obviously, not physically fight me. I was reading a column at a website where I work, you know, and there's this guy was posting a thing about, don't even remember what the thrust of the column was, But it was something about, you know, reading more diverse literature, right? And it was like, I think it just said something along the lines of, you know, that section is about diversity, and it's saying, you know, if you're about to call me a social justice warrior or something, go fuck yourself, die. Because, you know, diverse literature is where it's at, or something like that. And I just felt sort of like, I mean, I don't know if I feel the way you feel, but I also am not, I wasn't coming at it with the, like, this is a bullshit diversity ploy, you know, that you're using here. I mean, I didn't feel like that at all, and I'm not gonna say, no, diverse literature's bad. I mean, it just seems like people are very, the way people choose to express themselves about these things is often so negative and so combative. And I just wonder about that. I wonder how that's gonna age or something. And I think that, you know, there are people out there, right, who would see it as, well, that's how you get results. That's what you gotta do. Like, it's an unfortunate position to be in, and I guess that could be true. But I just, you know, listen, I have no reason to not respect a transgender person, whether or not they've, like, had surgeries or whatever is none of my fucking business. Like, I don't really care. That's not something I'm concerned with. But, you know, it's just sort of like, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm, like, becoming an old man. I'm like, you can just gently remind me, I suppose, to respect someone who's transgender, but I don't need someone to be like, respect this person or die, or like the cost of this and, you know, the old MasterCard or whatever. It's kind of the MasterCard thing of, and then this, priceless, you know, but it's sort of reversed. This cost, zero. I don't know, it's just very strange. It's just strange to me how aggressive people are online. Like, how aggressively they'll talk about things. But I also think you gotta just, like, not engage. It's so funny that, I don't know, I've been trying to think about how to write this column for Lit Reactor. But basically, I think that we've kind of, like, disempowered ourselves because we've been empowered online, right? So in other words, if you read, like, what directors or writers or all these people say, they're basically like, oh, I never read online reviews, or, like, I can't imagine as an author that you would ever really look at what people were saying about you online, because that would just be horrible. I mean, no matter who you are, no matter how good of a person you are, there's going to be someone who's like, well, this motherfucker, you know, wrote this. I mean, there's probably someone whoever that lady was who wrote, if you give a mouse a cookie, there's probably like someone who's saying, you know, this has Nazi overtones that I don't care for. And it implies that if you give someone basic human rights, then they're going to want more rights. You're goddamn right we will. I don't know, something. And so you're just like, oh my God, that is not what I was trying to do at all. It's a terrible misinterpretation. Anyway, I think because we've done this, we've sort of fucked ourselves. Because maybe we did have power, but now it's kind of like we don't. Because no one's listening. You can't really listen to, like, 1,000 different opinions on your book, right? Like, anyone can review a book on Goodreads, but nobody's really listening. I mean, the only people who are listening are other people who read the reviews, right? But it's not like a publisher is reading a Goodreads review and being like, that's very thoughtful, and maybe I'll bring this up with the author. And if I wrote a book, by the way, and the publisher was like, well, on Goodreads they're saying this, I'd be like, I don't care. I do not care what you think. Or what they think. And frankly, I'm a little disturbed that you seem to be so invested in what they're saying about that. Like, that seems crazy to me. So I don't know. I don't know if I would... I don't know if I'd allow that. I don't know if I would... I would try and not do it myself, right? I would try and not. And it's something you learn from Lit Reactor. From, like, if you do this, like, frequent sort of journalism stuff, and then people get very pissy about things. For example, and things you wouldn't expect. I wrote this column about notebooks and about why it's a bad idea to buy a notebook as a present for somebody who's a writer. And, you know, I think I made some pretty decent arguments. I wasn't saying, like, oh, you're a monster. And also, the end was kind of like, hey, if you're going to buy someone a notebook, if you insist, do it this way. Take them out, let them pick one, and buy it for them. You know what I mean? Like, instead of just handing them something that they might not want anyway. And overall, I just felt like it made sense. And of course, though, you get a bunch of people on the onlines, on the lines on, online, who will complain about it and be like, listen, you're an asshole, okay? If someone's trying to give you a fucking gift, you take it, you bitch. And what a jerk to be like, oh, I'm not gonna take a notebook that someone's giving me and all that stuff. Which is like, it's so funny to me because why don't people realize that, you know, when you write an article that's about like why you shouldn't give a gift of a notebook to somebody, that's not you giving me a notebook and then I'm handing you this article. And when someone gives me a notebook, I don't then give them a speech that's basically this article in condensed form. I just take it and move on. It's to prevent that from happening. And if you want notebooks as a gift, then you can just fucking ask for them, and I'm sure people will be happy to buy them for you. But then, like, this one guy commented, I made kind of a joke slash point in there about how I had these kind of, like, three rules for gift giving. And it's like, it has to be something that the person wouldn't buy for themselves. But it also has to be something they actually want. And then, or that's like reverse, right? So rule one, it has to be something they want. So, you know, that kind of avoids the gift giving where you're like, I'm giving my girlfriend a Nintendo Switch. And it's like, I think that's something you want. Rule number two is it has to be something they wouldn't buy for themselves. Or it's better if it's not. Because, like, you know, if someone would buy it themselves, I think what I said in there is like, well, what are you doing? You're just saving them a trip to Target. You know, if someone bought me something that I would totally buy myself, then it's really not, it's not a great gift. It's not a terrible gift, but it's not great. And then I added the third rule, and the kind of joke slash truth that I told was like, I had to add a third rule one time. Because my mom asked for a vacuum for her birthday. And I didn't think this would be a controversial move to not buy my mom a vacuum. And the reason I didn't buy my mom a vacuum when she asked for one for her birthday was I was like, that's a horrible birthday present. Which is why I had to add the third rule, which is like, it should be fun. I mean, it should be fun. It should be an enjoyable thing, not a vacuum. And so then this guy gets on there and he comments about how, like, what kind of asshole wouldn't buy his mom a vacuum? And I'm sort of like, well, clearly you read part of this, but I mean, what kind of asshole wouldn't buy his mom a vacuum? I would totally buy my mom a vacuum. I've bought her other shit that is way more boring or equally boring. I mean, I bought her a drill one time or a sander, and it's like, yeah, that's not exciting. There's nothing exciting about that. But I did it because it's what she wanted, right? But I bought those things for her because she was using them to do some things she wanted to do. Not because she was going to clean the house. I mean, what's the difference between buying your mom a vacuum versus buying your mom, like, I don't know, enough Lemon Pledge to last her the next year? There's no difference. I mean, but how sad is that to open that? A bunch of Windex or something like that. Now, if it was like the only thing she wanted, and she was like, I really want this vacuum, I guess I would consider it, but I probably wouldn't buy it for her birthday. This is the other thing, is like, it's her birthday. Like, it's her birthday. I want to get her something that she enjoys. I don't think she probably spends enough time enjoying her life or spends enough of her money to enjoy her life. as I think she should as much. And so it's like, yeah, I mean, it's a perfect excuse for her to do something that she enjoys, because basically I can buy it and then she has to enjoy it. She has no choice. She's forced into enjoying it, because if I get her a book she would like, then she has to read it. And then when she's reading it, she has to not be cleaning her house. I don't know. It's just like, what kind of asshole doesn't buy his mom a vacuum? I guess the kind of asshole who, like, grew up and his mom took care of, like, everything. And now he kind of feels like she deserves a break. I mean, sorry. Sorry if that's, like, patronizing. If I'm like, oh, I know what my mom needs. I'm not saying that. But here's the thing. She can buy her own vacuum. She's not, like, destitute. It's not like she needs me to buy her vacuum, right? It's just something that she was like, I felt like it was something that she thought, well, what do I need? And that was a practical thing she needed. And I was like, well, why don't you buy the practical thing you need and I'll buy you something fun? Because the thing is, if my mom was like broke and she had a vacuum and then she broke it and she's like, I need a new vacuum, of course I'd buy her a fucking vacuum. Like, why would I not do that? I'm not going to do it like this. Anyway, so, like, I had this whole response typed up to this guy, and then I deleted it, and then I had another response, and I deleted that, and then I was like, you know what, I'm not even going to respond to this guy. Because I think the truth of the matter is that when somebody is a dick on the internet, the best thing to do is, like, make them think they've been ignored. Like, that is the best revenge. Because, man, people fucking hate it when it seems like their opinion on things does not matter. I mean, when they just see something like that and they're like, oh, no one cares what I think. And so even though I did care what he thought, because it struck a chord with me emotionally, obviously. So even though I cared on that level, I decided to pretend like I didn't, because that's the ultimate revenge, is to just sort of be like, you know what, fuck you and your feedback, your quote unquote feedback. It's so weird to, like, working for Lit Reactor, right? Because I write these columns. These are all opinions on things. All of them. I mean, nobody is changing the law based on what I've done. You know, there are no big companies out there changing the way they do business because of a column I wrote. They're not, you know, I wrote one about, like, does Bob Dylan deserve the Nobel Prize? They were not going to revoke that from him based on my conclusion. Nor would anyone even consider that. And here's the thing, he doesn't care. And the difference between, I guess, doing that and then just commenting and being an asshole on Twitter is like, well, I wrote it because I cared about it and I wanted to see what would happen, but I have no illusions that he would read that. I have no thought that he's going to read that and be like, ooh, you made some good points. It's just, it's weird to me. I think it's also one of these cases of, stuff like that. I mean, it's hard to make stuff and it's easy to criticize. And I think that, like, a lot of us have gotten into this mode of, like, if I'm critiquing something, that's how I show that I'm smart and stuff. But the reality is, like, well, just make something else. Just channel that energy into making your own thing. I mean, like, if you hate this fucking podcast, you could tweet me and be like, that was a shitty podcast, Pete. But I'd be like, well, I don't know. Go fucking make your own podcast then. You got an hour to listen to it. You got an hour to make your own. I mean, this is more accessible technology than it's ever been. It's never been easier to make your own talk radio show. So why you would critique a different one rather than making your own? I guess I'm just like in that. I just feel that way a lot. Like, I don't know. When I write book reviews online, rarely does the book review concern the actual book. I think I only try and do that if I thought the book was really, really great these days. Because it's just like, otherwise, what's the point? I mean, who cares? Every book is like a 3.4 to a 3.8. If it's a 4.0 or higher, there's like barely any reviews. If it's like a 2 point something or lower, it's probably, Well, it might be terrible or it might not. I don't know. Like, I read I just read this book called Miles from Nowhere by Naomi Moon. And it's this really great kind of minimalist short story thing. But a lot of people were like, there's no one to root for in the story. And I fucking hate that. Man, do I hate that as a critique. There's no one to root for. Okay, well, sorry. Sorry you didn't find anyone that was your fucking hero. Yeah, this isn't a story about a guy who takes a super soldier serum. It's a story about a lady who's, like, struggling to survive and is addicted to drugs and kind of accidentally / on purpose aborts her own baby by jumping off the Staten Island ferry and hitting the water. I mean, come on. It's just weird. It's weird to me because people critique these things too as if... It's so funny to critique books, I guess, or like critique stories. Like, I really believe in looking at stories and critiquing them in a way of like productive critique of, well, these changes would work well, or like, here's how this person accomplished that, right? Which is really great. But I don't really believe in looking at books from a critical standpoint of like, I didn't think this narrator sounded like he was really for. You know, he seemed... The Curious Incident of the Dog at Nighttime, that kid was awfully precocious. I don't really buy that. And I'm like, okay, well, all right. There you go. This person didn't buy it. Because as soon as someone says that, someone else will say, oh, I totally buy it, because da-da-da-da. And you just kind of... Then you're at a stalemate. It's very weird. It's like there's no such thing as subjective critique. But this is getting way too literary for my own taste, to be honest. I just finished another book called MFA versus NYC, which is about like MFA programs and creative writing, or like just going to New York and getting a job. It kind of just made me feel like everyone's full of shit, basically. Because number one, surprise, the way almost everyone tells you to do it is the way they did it. You know, or they're kind of like, well, here's how I did it, and I'm mostly happy with it. So you're like, oh, okay. Or then, oh my God, though. There were a couple of essays in there that I was just like, what is this? I guess there was this thing published. It was like something about fiction programs in the post-war era. And how, you know, the rise of them and what that caused and da-da-da-da. And it was these two essays about that. So it was these two essays critiquing a different essay, which was not contained in this book. And so they're just kind of like talking ad nauseum about this and using their fancy fucking words and their fancy way of talking about it. And I was just like, there is nothing. This is like so unreadable as to be comical. Like, it took me back to being in school when you had to read these sort of critical essays about things. And you're like, I guess that when you write a critical essay, you know that people are going to read it because they have to. You know that they're going to be like, you know that they're going to be forced to read it. And therefore, you don't have to make it good or interesting or... have like real content. You can just kind of put whatever in there, which is fucking nuts. I don't know why. Like, it's like when you read a textbook. I just remember reading history textbook. That was like the only textbook that we had to read for class, and we had to read it like chapter by chapter, and you had to make note cards and do all this shit. So you actually had to read it. And of course, what era of history, of American history, did we not get to? Basically, Korean War forward. And so I'm like, okay, so we're not going to learn about anything from the last, I don't know, 20% of this book. And it's the same shit that we've never learned. I'd never learned about the Korean War, ever. And so it's like, okay, cool. Because every fucking history class is like, let's start at the beginning. And it's like, I don't know, can't we start somewhere significant? Like, can't we start at World War II or something? World War II to the present? Of course, too, one of the essay questions on our, like, AP test was about Vietnam. And it was like a political cartoon. Oh, my God. If you want to ask me what kind of writing I hate more than any, it's political cartoons. Political cartoons, to me, epitomize the worst of the worst. Because it's like, all right, you've got a drawing here, but the drawing is doing none of the lifting. Because it's like they label shit all the time. They'll be like, okay, this pickup truck represents Republicans, and this barn represents Democrats. And, like, then they'll just hang a sign on it. Literally hang a sign. And then they'll make some point that you're like, I see what you're saying there, and that's not... It's like they confuse truthiness with entertainment value and cleverness. Like, the more true something is, the more clever it is. And that, I don't find that to be the case at all. It's like, I don't know, I think something can be really clever or especially funny. The difference between clever and funny is, like, perfectly encapsulated by political cartoons. Because it's like, ah, that's true. That's how I feel about this, too. And it's like, okay.
Especially because, basically, it seems like political cartoons are
these broad statements that we can all agree with, right? Trump is dumb. Okay. The situation in North Korea is pretty unstable and precarious. And you're like, yeah, I mean, I can agree with that. And it doesn't take a lot of thought. And who would disagree with that? Who's going to look at that and say, this is what I don't get, I guess, about a political cartoon. Like, it seems like they're these political outsider products, right? But the truth of the matter, if you ask me, seems to be that they're just sort of saying the same fucking shit again. Just with a drawing. I don't know. I don't get it. And it's like a political outsider thing, but who sees a political cartoon and gets all fired up and then, like, writes a letter to the editor and is like, what the fuck? That's not cool. Or, like, this is completely inaccurate or whatever. I mean, does anyone care? Does anyone look at those? Who looks at those? It's sort of like, you know, I would make fun of New Yorker cartoons, right? Because they're always so boring and there's not really a joke. I mean, Playboy cartoons are better than New Yorker cartoons, for fuck's sake. But at least New Yorker cartoons aren't pretending that they're doing some important work. It's like the same shit, but at least the New Yorker one is like, I don't know, it's a fucking cartoon. We just put them in. We have to.
What out of, like, every 50 is kind of funny?
Apparently, I don't understand. I wonder how people who live in New York feel about, like, the New Yorker or New York Magazine. I would be insulted by it because I'd be like, you know, we're not all these people who, like, have our noses up in the air and whatever. I had, just like that, I had a conflict with someone briefly online because they were saying, they're asking if there's a fax machine somewhere. And I was like, oh, our library has one and, you know, whatever. And then I also linked her to, like, a bunch of services where you can fax things online, like you can scan and then fax them for free. And the response was, I'm not going to Greeley for anything ever. Which really pisses me off. Not because I think it's like this is the most amazing place ever, but because I'm just like, okay, so you're using this as an opportunity to slam a place, you know, that you know nothing about. Good for you. It's such, like, an easy thing, and people think they're so great because they live somewhere. They think, like, oh, well, I live here, and therefore I know everything, and I know what's good and bad about life. I mean, I've spent the last month now traveling back and forth between two super different places. You know, Portland, Oregon, liberal as fuck. Tons of homeless people, you know, a lot more diversity and whatever. And then Greeley, which is pretty conservative-ish and, like, pretty white and whatever. And I don't know. I wouldn't claim that, like, I don't think being in one of those places or the other makes you a better person at all. I mean, I just don't. I don't get it. I don't think I've become, like, a better person. And I don't think if I moved there, I'd become a better person either. I'd probably become a worse person. Because I'd be like, I don't know, man. It just feels sometimes like when you're in a city environment, you got to be more in it for yourself for some reason. I don't know why I feel like that. But anyway, it just pissed me off. And I responded and was like, maybe if your highfalutin city libraries listen to people who need shit like yourself, they would have a fucking fax machine and you wouldn't have to come to Greeley. But then I regretted it. I was like, again, what you should have done is just not looked and just been like, just pretend you didn't even see it. Because, man, nothing's better than that. That's the sweetest revenge. I wish there was some kind of way that you could... I think this is the problem, right? It's easily the best way to get at somebody, to get back at somebody. But it's not. It doesn't feel satisfying in the moment. You want to come up with a good slam and then push enter and then send it, right? But you can't. But what you can do is start a podcast like this. And then when someone says something that pisses you off, you can talk back to them and they can't really talk to you. And they probably will never hear it. And nobody else knows what's going on either. So maybe that's the best revenge. Maybe the best revenge is to start a podcast and talk about something ad nauseum and force other people to listen to it. And just be like, you know what? If you never want to come here ever, that's fine. Go fuck yourself. Enjoy your awesome city where you have to send a fax for something. Because, by the way, I've never had to send a fax for anything here ever. Because I can drive across the city and it doesn't take 3 fucking hours. How do you like me now? All right. Well, that was crazy. Thanks for listening. We got a lot more of these to go, but, seems like we're going to make it, huh? All right. See you next time.